Blog Talk Radio.
Someone and they did not help. Sometimes someone asks, what did you do to get punished this way? Abuse is abuse. Abuse is not punishment. Abuse is torture, crippling, and debilitating. What advice would you give others to help them through the horrendous memories? Are you there for the person, or are you part of the knife in your friend or relative's back that you may have turned a blind eye to it? Are you claiming to advocate against abuse but condemn the people who tell and share their stories? Do you want to be a part of the solution or part of the problem? Let's stand united and discuss ways in which we may help others. What ways have you helped you in your healing journey? Are you in a constant battle fighting the negative forces within? Stop. Let's encourage one another. Are you an officer in the judicial system not doing your job to help the victim? That means you're not doing your duty. Your duty is to serve and protect. How do we open the public's eyes so they can acknowledge and feel the need to help protect the children and our citizens? The children are our future. You matter. Without further ado, our guest today is Blackstone Lawyer. Today he'll be discussing where he left off last time and talking about Route 29 stalkers. Welcome back, Blackstone Lawyer. Thanks for coming.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and I hope everybody out there listening is doing great as well. Thank you for having me on your program again.
Well, you're quite welcome. You're always welcome here.
Well, thank you. I think the last time we were having a discussion was the ordeal whenever my dad was dying in the ICU and these people was putting out the misinformation on me?
Yes.
Okay, I don't remember what part we had.
But you could go back over the part. You had people that were watching you and said that you needed, they needed to watch you and go wherever you go because you were a thief and you stole things. It's what you were talking about. And you had proved to them that you were not a terrorist or anything. You were not an informant, as they were saying you were, that you actually worked with your government official type of thing. They're like, oh, no, you got us where you're trying to get us to harm a government official. And so basically that's where we were leaving off at.
Yeah. They had hired these guys to watch me at Piedmont Hospital when my dad was dying in the ICU in July of 2001 after I had escaped my brother's automobile the previous evening with Roger Nance and Craig Manier in the vehicle. And they had told these people that I was stolen $3,500 worth of stuff from some guy and turned around and got him busted for drugs, and that they needed to follow me back to where the stuff was that I supposedly had stolen, where they could get it back and hopefully get up the money to bond the guy out of jail. And that's what these people were told who was, you know, put at the hospital to watch me. That I was just a low-life thief and a snitch or informant for the police. And when I confronted them, they found out that not an informant. It was a government official, and I hadn't stolen anything from anyone nor had got anyone busted for drugs. So that worked against the others also, because two of the guys they had hired to watch me had been remodeling a retail space at this convenience store. I think it's on the corner of Buford Highway and Peachtree, Dunwoody Road or something like that, Peachtree or Chambly or something like that, where they were working at March 11th, 1997, when all the explosives was planted out along Buford Highway corridor there when they tried to hit those 11 targets, including the General Motors Assembly Plant, the IRS building, and, of course, the Doraville rail station with truck bombs. Well, these gentlemen, they got stuck with a backpack explosive out by the dumpster someone had planted there where they were working. So if it had detonated, it could have killed them and everyone at that convenience store.
I have a question. So, was this before they tried to bomb the Olympics?
No, ma'am. This is after the Centennial Park attack. This is Centennial Park attack was on my daughter's birthday in 1996, July 27th.
Okay.
This was March 11th, 1997, when they pretty much tried to blow, you know, the city of Doraville off the map by hitting all these targets, including Mansfield Oil, who had the jet fuel stored for Delta Airlines, and then of course the Citgo fueling depot where they filled up theirs, and then of course the fuel farm and AmeriGas propane distribution facility, the main facility in Atlanta used to be there. There's a Chambly police department located where it used to be located at with a little park nearby it, but that's where the bear gas used to be. They moved all that out after 1997 because it was just a huge powder keg if someone had gone in there and successfully hit all that. It could have caused some major, major damage, a loss of life, numbers up toward 100,000 or more, because you have these employees' apartments, shopping centers and other businesses, and just a lot of people out in that area on a daily basis because it's so highly populated. So these guys, two of them, is who they hired to monitor my activities of leaving the hospital and returning and stuff like that. They would notify them when I left, and when I returned, they would notify them. So when they found out that I was a government official and actually the one responsible for stopping all those terrorist attacks, they were pretty much my buddies after that. I mean, they was not going to do much of anything as far as giving them an accurate time of when I left that hospital. They'd wait about 10 minutes after I was gone, and they'd call them, well, he just left. So by the time they got over there looking around on Peachtree Street for me, I was already gone. And they'd be like, well, this guy, she sure does know how to disappear really good. Well, that's because I had the people they hired helping me instead of, you know, helping them. So
I want to go ahead and tell anyone who wants to call in, they can call in at 563-999-3517. Again, the number is 563-999-3517. Thank you.
So what happened was there was like two more attempts on my life after I escaped my brother's automobile on July the 7th of 2001. And, of course, these guys were put out there the next day on the 8th. And to that, on the 10th, I thought I might could walk back to Piedmont Road where I was staying at and be okay. But I wound up being chased again by this guy who I can identify now as Jeff Carrier, a real estate broker in Atlanta. I found out who he was in 2005. I was able to find out who he is. And he's not a very, very good individual. He's tied in with a bunch, Home Depot, Atlanta Falcons, of course, same bunch. But he was trying to help my brother and them get rid of him. So what they did, the guys that was helping me, was they got with a bunch of their buddies and colleagues and stuff and gave them a rundown about who I actually was instead of an informant and a thief. So they were not too happy. So on the 12th, July 2001, they told me, they said, what you're going to do is we need you to walk down Peachtree Street to Far Road today around 3:30 because your brother and Nance and the rest of the bunch has got everything lined up to assassinate you today. And we got some backup to come in to help deal with them. So, main guy, I can't mention his name, but he drove the four-wheel drive, he drove me up Peach Street and let me out at the pizza bar. And he went up and made a right on Far Road, and he drove down and gave him the signal that I was walking it up on my way. So I walked up and turned the corner, and of course he pulled up in the parking lot, and their shopping center used to be there, and got out of his vehicle. So they saw me walk up and around the corner, and my brother and Nance and Manier and all them got their guns ready and were about to shoot him, and they saw a group of other people they knew walking up with their guns, and they were like, well, heck yeah, we got us some backup. This is going to be an overkill. And next thing you know, their own people was pointing guns at them. And they were shot, and they just told everybody to shut up, and they just looked at Fred. And I said, Fred, we're going to ask you a question one time only. You better not lie to us, or we're going to kill every one of you. But what is it so important, Fred, that you want your little brother, Charles, dead? They put it to him like that. Well, Craig Manier started to say something. They said, shut up, Craig. We're not asking you. We're asking Fred. You open your mouth again, we'll blow your brains out. We're asking Fred. So they asked Fred again, well, Roger wants to jump in. They said, shut up, Roger. We're not asking you. Open your mouth again. We'll blow your brains out. We're asking Fred. Fred, what is it that is so important you want your little brother, Charles, dead, Fred? I could hear him sitting, standing down at the Shell gas station up there hollering at him. And I asked them to give him one strike because I knew my brother was not going to tell the truth the first round. They said if he lied, they were going to kill them all. I said, fellas, you might as well get ready to blow them all away because he's not going to tell you the truth the first go around. Give him a strike, and if he lies to you again, blow them all away for all I care. So they gave him that one strike, and he sat there, well, he's an informant, and I think one of them didn't have a bullet in the chamber and clicked the gun, you know, pulled the trigger, but there wasn't anything in the trigger. He said, you just lied. We know better. So, Fred, that's your first strike and your only strike. We're going to ask you again, and if you lie to us this time, we're going to kill you all. We know all about your brother. What is it about your little brother that's so important? You want him dead, Fred. So he turns around and he tells him, well, he's a beneficiary to our dad's estate. He's standing in my way to this, 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 which they knew was a half truth. And since it was a half-truth, they pretty much broke it down and told them, says, any of y'all ever harms a hair on that man's head, you're all dead. So after that, I had all this protection in Buckhead in Atlanta. I didn't have, you know, I had the protection from the police, and all of a sudden I had the protection from the local people there in Buckhead. So I didn't have to worry about looking over my shoulder anymore after that. I was very popular in that area after that. People over there that found out who I was, what I was, and what I did, and it was great. After that, I remember one time I went into a Waffle House over there on Piedmont and Far Road, and this Atlanta police officer was in there, and I had my breakfast and was about to pay my ticket. Nope, nope, nope. We got that, buddy. It's on us. So it was wonderful after that, the exception of losing my dad on the 19th. of that year. But as far as living in that area, it was just, I didn't have to worry about anything after that. It was just a huge relief.
That's great. You did have some support, because had they not done what they did, you, well, I got a feeling that you still would be protected by God.
Well, yeah, I have to give my credit to him 100%. I mean, it's, you know, I tell people it's humanly impossible for me to accomplish what I've accomplished. So don't look at me for what I'm accomplished. Look at what I did. It's not me who did. I was just following this, you know, the path and the footsteps that was set out for me to follow. And if I never had my experiences, who's to say that I would have been an atheist or been worse than what my older brother or my cousin Robert would have ever dreamed of being? But I cheated, you know, twice in 1972 at 6 years of age, and I'm still here today and can give my testimony to my, you know, to my experiences of the one we know as the Lord Jesus Christ and our Heavenly Father, who, you know, he guides us to. But I'm going to stick with really the cases and the evidence and the victims and the witnesses and the perpetrators on this case that I have the goods on.
I kind of laughed when you said you cheated several times, and I was thinking, no, you didn't cheat, Dad. It's like they were misconstrued, because God's like, no, you're not done yet. Get back up there.
Yeah, this, I've had people ask me, well, why'd you do this or why'd you do that? And it goes back to, well, what would you do if God told you to do something? Would you ignore it or would you do it? That's what they all say. Well, I'm not going to go against what he has to say. Well, neither did I, so why hold it against me? Because there were some people that were favorable for revolution against the government, which I can't say I blame them. But I wasn't about to go out and support or sit by and just allow a bunch of child-raping lunatics take control of the world. I mean, that's pretty much what it boiled down to, and that's what they wanted. And today, when we turn on the news on television, we see how they're, you know, pushing the transgender ideology and the gender reassessment surgeries and stuff. It's child abuse. It's genital mutilation. And it's against the law, but apparently, if they're approved by the government, they can get it. Well, the words approved by the government, you can break the law. And American people, I'm confident they're about ready to get past this mess. And only way to straighten this mess up is get these people indicted and criminally prosecuted for the crimes that they have committed since that 25-year run for the surrender of that hydrogen bomb at Cook Ridge expired on the 29th of January last year. So I'm running a year behind on this.
I thank you for everything you are doing, though.
Well, I thank everybody for their prayers and support. I wish I could snap my fingers and it already be done. And I've had some setbacks. I've had some delays, but I am in North Carolina working on getting the stuff rolling, and Macon County has refused, or I should say Macon County, the magistrate of Macon County has refused to make any action, so we're going to be taking him before the Office of Administrative Hearings.
It needs done, don't it?
Well, it has to be done. JB and I, we released this information on Hunter Biden 2 years ago, so a lot of people got to hear Congressman Jim Jordan and James Comer sit there and tell them that the two individuals that had released this information on Hunter Biden was accurate, and just check out what all we had to post. And so each time I would post something on Facebook or something, next thing I know it would be coming out on YouTube by another group or person the following week, which is fine with me as long as the information is getting out there. That's really what's important. So,
right.
But there's been some developments that happened, I think, since our last interview. I got him this one chat that we're both in there, and I found a picture of Franklin Delano Floyd, and I was introduced to him the evening I met John Ramsey. Mike McLaughlin, he had just started his job with a pretrial release there at the Cobb County Courthouse in November of 1983, days before my 18th birthday. And he brought Floyd over there to drop him off with Ramsey and my brother, Dance, and a bunch there from Swayton Graphics. But I was introduced to Floyd as, you know, he was introduced to me as Bill Ramsey. And they never claimed to be in brothers, but just good friends. So unlocking that, I was able to do some digging in, and I found more information on the Route 29 stalkers case as well, which Roger Dance, my brother Fred Rogers, and a Richard Avenes were all involved in.
Was that the one also that I found the picture of and then asked you about it because of did you tie it in to another case?
Well, you remember I told you you looked familiar, and it took me a few minutes for it to finally register where I remembered him from. And
yes,
I gave you the I sent you the picture of Jennifer Olson.
Right.
She graduated Lassiter High School, if I remember correctly.
She was a beautiful girl. She was a beautiful young lady.
Yeah, she was a sweetheart. I mean, and she had this huge crush on me. And she worked with my girlfriend at the Burger King. And she let her know just as much as she would let me know as soon as we broke up. I was her man. I wasn't going to need another woman in my life once I broke up with my girlfriend and hooked up with her. I wasn't going to even want to look at another woman in my life. I was, you know, her boyfriend. I mean, she was
for you.
She did, and I mean, and everybody loved her. I mean, she was just always real nice and real friendly to everyone. You never heard a negative peep out of her unless, you know, maybe some jerk or somebody might would say something to her and she might would get a little offensive. But what young ladies don't? I mean, She was still.
I did the same thing. Yes.
Yeah. Full pop. You know, a friendly, happy-go-lucky, you know, a young lady, and everybody loved her. And I don't think she even had any enemies. And one day, my girlfriend was getting off work, and I went over there and sat down and was having some food, and she was sitting with us, and we were over there talking and eating and cutting up. And Fred and Roger pulled up and got out and came inside and with us. And of course, you know, introduced, you know, as my brother. And so she thought, well, you know, if he's Charles's brother, he's my friend too, you know. So she was very open.
What part of your, where was this at this time?
Ma'am?
Where was this at this time?
This was at the Burger King at Sprayberry Crossing in Marietta, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sprayberry.
Which, of course, shopping center's no longer there. They tore it down, I think, last year or year before last, but it was there on Sandy Plains before. Post Oak Trip is where seeing my girlfriend worked at.
Yeah, I was trying to keep the different locations in my mind, like trying to keep it there. So thank you for answering that question.
Yeah, about 3 miles up the road, the Canton Road Highway 5 connector, is the bar of the place, is where I had my little confrontation with John Andrew Ramsey back in 2005. It's also on Sandy Plains Road. So that whole area there is really, you know, where my dad's family is from, because he and his family are buried across from Sprayberry High School. They're on Sandy Plains Road. And, of course, there's Vandiver Heights was named after one of my aunt's married names, and he did a lot of developing on that road back in the late 1960s and the early 1970s. Once we returned from Naples, Florida in 71, he picked that back up and went on and did more developing on that road, which he developed a large part of East Cobb in the 1970s. And
how many counties is it that basically is in with that big Hotlanta area?
Well, it's all growing, because I want to say around 8 counties, because, you know, metropolitan Atlanta used to be just as, you know, just the surrounding counties of Fulton, DeKalb, Cobb, and Gwinnett, and Clayton County. But, you know, it's all expanded out and grown so much that you have other counties that are really included in the metropolitan Atlanta area now, as far as up to really into Pickens County now. And so when you say metropolitan Atlanta area, you're talking a huge area now, because Pickens, Forsyth, you know, even part of Hall County, it's now considered part of the metro Atlanta area now. So it's a
I would think that Atlanta metropolitan area is bigger than the Nashville metropolitan area.
Oh, it is. It's about as big as Houston now. Now, I remember when I lived out in Houston in 1983 and 1984, that Houston you know, was a lot larger than Atlanta was at that time. But Atlanta's just about as big, if not bigger, than Houston now, in, you know, the metropolitan area there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It has really, really grown a lot in the past 40 years. I mean, it once upon a time was a lot of farmland out in the rural areas, and the small towns were actually small towns. They're really not small towns anymore. There used to be there are still small towns in Georgia, don't get me wrong, but they have just so much more. They have just so much more people living in them now. You really can't call them a small town.
Right.
You can have South Georgia. That's different. But when you start getting in North Georgia, it's not like it used to be.
Sorry, I got you off track and wondered about that, because I was thinking about how big of the area the corruption was, just the metropolitan area in itself, and that's what I was trying to picture. We could go back to that Miss Olson.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, she made the mistake of telling Fred and Roger that, you know, her family went on vacation to Hilton Head every year. And she had a vacation coming up 3 weeks from then. And that kind of interested them. And they made it a point to keep coming back each week to make certain that she was still going on her vacation. And the week before she went, they came back in there just to see if she was still going on her vacation. It didn't occur to that to us at the time until after she was murdered. But she was so excited to go on vacation with her family. She told everybody where she was going. And it was like three nights, maybe four nights into her vacation is when they wound up murdering her.
That's just because the fact that she liked you and trying to get back at you, right?
Yeah, it was pretty much only thing I could figure was over jealousy. And I remember when I was up at Lake Altoona up by the Delta one night with my brother and Roger. And I was still in high school when this happened. And I can't remember the girl's name. I knew her from school. And she had went up there to the lake, and we went across her up there at the lake, and Fred and Roger was, you know, really, really cool with her in order to lure her to go out in the woods with them, where they wanted her to go, felt safe going with them. And I forgot the guy's name that showed up there. And she got out there with them and found out she made a huge mistake going out in the woods with them. And I heard her scream. And I went over to see what was happening. And they were about to rape her. And she wanted out of there. And I told her, oh, come on, I'll get you out of here. And, of course, there was some things said to me. And I'm like, well, I'm taking her out of here. I'm getting her away from you guys. And I got her away from them.
Thank you. And
got her back to her friends. And I don't think anything bad wound up happening to her and her friends. I think there was a couple of more skirmishes with her and her friends out of them, but nothing that resulted in any arrests or charges or anything, but they wound up leaving her and her friends alone. So when my girlfriend and I got word back that Jennifer had been murdered, we immediately suspected that my brother and Roger had something to do with it. So we wound up, I wound up taking a trip to South Carolina once I found out who this Richard guy was. And went out there and spoke with his mother. They lived an hour or so away from Hilton Head. But it was close enough that Roger could drive out and stay at Richard's mother's house, because Richard was in the Navy. He was away. I don't think he was on basic training. He may have been. I can't remember, but he was in the Navy and wasn't home, but Roger was allowed to come and stay at his mother's house in order to drive down to...
Richard is the same one you're talking about. That's a stalker, right?
Yeah, that's the picture of the guy you sent me, Richard Evanitz, that you found from the Route 29 stalker.
Mm-hmm. Just making sure some people, the listeners, understood what Richard you're referring to.
Yes, Richard Evanitz. And so once Roger located the Olsons, he contacted Fred, and Fred drove down. And she was last seen talking. Her parents didn't know who she was talking to. They knew it was an adult male, but nobody they could identify, before that point. They were able to identify him once they returned back to Marietta. But we couldn't prove, we didn't have any proof that could do anything at that time to get them arrested. So her parents and her brother knew who murdered her. If they're still alive, I hope they are, but I can't get my high hopes up too high, because they'd have to be in their 90s,
right.
80s or 90s. But I imagine her brother's still around, but it's not going to be a shock to them whenever it's disclosed to them that Richard Evanitz was actually the third party, or to say his mother, in the homicide, their daughter and sister. But Roger wound up purchasing a house in Virginia Beach, so where they could have more access to up north, and that's when I believe he pretty much teamed up with Rex Harriman and Evanitz there in the Route 29 stalker incidents. And of course, Fred was involved in that mess as well. And I don't think I think they're just now breaking the ice up there in the Gilgo Beach murders with the Harriman investigation right now, that they're going to wind up tying my brother Nance and Evanitz in with some of the homicides of Harriman. And I think we're going to find unsolved cases all the way from Florida to New York.
And I hope and pray that even Randy gets caught for this.
Well, he is. People have been wanting answers. And it's like I tell them, well, if you're going to solve the JonBenet Ramsey murder, you have to solve John Ramsey. Once you solve John Ramsey, you've solved the JonBenet Ramsey murder.
Oh, yeah, remember he was claiming to be Satan himself?
Yeah, yes. From what he sat there and told Beth, he honestly believes he's Satan himself. And I tell you what, I can't prove him wrong. I mean, he is really, really that evil and twisted. And believe me, he's not the only one from, oh, I wouldn't say from Georgia, because he's a damn Yankee. He's from up there in Michigan, but...
See, my friends that are not understanding who he means on Beth, they're talking about Beth Ramsey, John Ramsey's older daughter.
Mm-hmm.
That was murdered
as well. Yeah, because they, my brother was involved in both the homicides of Beth and John Benet.
As well as some prominent people in politics.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to look at Hannaway. Jane just got remarried to Tiptoe Ted again. Ted Turner, he was involved in this mess as well, the Atlanta child murders, and right along with Big Ray Duncan and Sam Duncan and Arthur Blank. And I think what's going to be kind of a relief to a lot of people that's following the white supremacy ideology is they're going to be able to break out of that and realize just how twisted and published and promoted that it has been by the Jewish community, because they always have to throw in that the white supremacists are against the Jews. And when we look into this death cult, we come to find quite a few members of the Jewish community involved in this push for what they call white supremacy. And even the founder, Ku Klux Klan, was Jewish.
Wow.
So everything's not the way it appears. You know, this Odinist cult, yes, there's people out there that is involved in this cult that do revere Odin, but Fred, even though he got into Wiccan and all of that, he was simply a Yahweh, a Messianic Judaism form of religion, you know, really what we would call Christ, you know, first church and his teachings and all that is what he believed, but he also got into Wicca, which was really a shock to me, because people that are in those Messianic Judaism sectors of what we call form of Christianity, they're not going to engage in those type of activities because it's contrary to, you know, the teachings of the scriptures. But look at a lot of these people. Some of them are Baptist ministers, some of them are deacons. I mean, they come from all walks of life. Some of them are filthy rich, and some of them just burger flippers. They don't discriminate when it comes to recruiting members.
Can I ask you how you tied everybody together in the Route 29 Stalkers? How you ended up figuring out who everybody was?
Well, from what I had heard out of Judge McLaughlin during the raid at my house in 2013, and also the night that I heard out of Frank Floyd and John Ramsey, the night that I met them over there by Layton Graphics and Tip Top Poetry, where they my brother and Roger, what I figured, they were in training to become serial killers. So that's why they were in with people like John Ramsey and Frank Floyd.
Did you say John Ramsey had like a defense? What kind of business was it he had?
Well,
he worked
graphics. He did in 1983 when I met John Ramsey. He was working with Del Montegraff with Polaroid in the microfilm technology. Because in 1984, the following year, the U.S. government shut down the micro production in the United States. So, of course, we only have two major film companies, which was Kodak and Polaroid. Well, Monty, okay. He was with Kodak. He used to work the little Kodak booth there in Marietta and Smyrna and other parts of Metro Atlanta in the 70s. Because he would take the proofs that the people would turn in to have them develop, and he and Ramsey, they would develop pictures and people, of course, if they had pictures of the little naked babies, they were being sold over in the European market. So that's
how they go about. How they go about, you know, whenever they made the reel-to-reel type of videos and stuff back in with the child porno stuff. How did they have to turn that over there to then get some of it through the Polaroid company, or do they do it themselves?
I don't know exactly how they did it. I know a lot was being filmed there on Bentley Farm in 1972. I cannot think of the little girl's name. She was abducted over by a laundromat not far from that farm. And, of course, just a few months ago, Cobb County DA's office announced that they had solved her homicide and that the perpetrator that had murdered her had died. Well, Jim Stubbs was involved in her murder. According to Doug McRae, he was involved in her murder, according to Doug, in 1996. So there's more than meets the eye in her homicide. And there's people are saying there's a lot more than meets the eye in the Wayne Williams conviction for the Atlanta child murders. Because it all still ties over there to Bentley Farm, which was also tied over to the Boys Farm in Winchester, Tennessee, and was tied over there to the North Fox Island pedophile ring ran by Frank Sheldon and John Ramsey.
Yeah, your very first interview with me, you talked about Bentley Farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are other farms I am unaware of where this happens. Also, what Richard Jewell discovered in 2005 and 2006 was a lot of these closed-down Child Protective Services buildings have also been used. Local law enforcement, like in Demarest, Georgia, for example, is what Richard found out, were engaging in child sex trafficking and the production of pornography. And I believe that's what got him killed. People think, well, he just died of a heart attack. I just find that hard to believe that it's a natural heart attack, because there is a heart attack gun used by the CIA to get rid of people when they'll have a heart attack. It's a little piece of ice into the skin, and it dissolves in the skin, and it's hard to detect by a coroner or medical examiner. And then, of course, we see what happened to Nancy Schaefer and her husband, Roger, over it.
Right. And I'm glad that she had Nancy tried to get you in line with a friend of mine, and I'm glad that the friend of mine was... you know, I didn't know Nancy myself, okay? I just heard of her.
Mm.
But whenever I was talking to my friend, Amy Sharon, or my friend, then it's out there about what's going on there in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nancy discouraged me from going to Rick's funeral because she didn't think it would be a good idea if I showed up. But I wanted to go to his funeral and actually meet his mom. But she didn't think it was a good idea. And she had this lady in Texas that she wanted me to talk to. And if I remember correctly, she got scared and didn't want to proceed too much further, so I never was able to make contact with the lady in Texas like she and I had originally discussed.
Right. And she wound up dead, Vance Chaper, right?
Yes, ma'am. Her and her husband, Roger, both.
So, could you tell me how many people were murdered on the Route 29 with the stalkers?
I think there
was... Do you know any of the numbers?
I think there was 4 women. I'm still having to take time to look in it when I have breaks to where I can. I'm still having to research it right now myself. But going, I think there was 4. There was... some women who was approached by Nance, he was in a pickup truck, and they was approached by him on the highway, so they was able to give a composite sketch of him. And that's how I know to match it up to Nance. Evidence, when you sent me his picture, I didn't even know that he was... really a suspect in Route 29 because I had just started checking into it when you sent me his picture. And
I put in mind just because there's 4 people, that's like there could be a lot more numbers out there that the bodies have never been found on these missing people.
That's right. And they're still finding bodies over the United States that are unsolved that they cannot connect to these people because they lack the DNA. But we
right.
know pretty much have to be connected to them. It's like the Mary Carter case. And the reason why I was able to find her case so fast was because I remember being told the night that I met John Ramsey and Frank Floyd, I was also told again in 1996 and Doug McRae in Murphy, North Carolina, that Frank Sheldon, John Ramsey's partner from the North Fox Island pedophile ring, were in Dayton, Ohio at Floyd's place, and he went to the store to get him some beer, and he found this woman and her 2 children needing a ride, and he wound up taking them back to his house where his buddies were at, and they were drinking and doing drugs and all that. John Ramsey was there as well. So one of them, I think it was Doug and Frank, said something, or Sheldon said something inappropriate to one of the little girls, and their mother went off, and she just went ballistic on them. They wound up killing her right there in front of her two children. And, of course, they took her body elsewhere and dumped her body out and left her two children with her. I was told
they killed
how
kids?
They did. Ma'am?
Did they kill the kids, or did they just...
No, ma'am. It was bad enough them seeing their mother die. They didn't feel like murdering them, too.
Raping them or nothing? Because they like raping them.
Not that I understand. After they murdered their mother in front of them, they didn't want to do anything to them except get them and their mother's body out of there.
Right. I guess so they could clean up the evidence.
Real little, real young. But they, you know, she was murdered in front of them. Now, how, according to Floyd and Ramsey, how they became buddies was Floyd was living in Dayton. Ohio John went up there on business and was staying at a motel. So he decided he was going to drive around one that evening, see if he could find him a young girl or a woman to rape or a woman to hook up with. And he was driving around, came near a shopping center, and he noticed Floyd trying to abduct a girl, but she was... she was fighting him off and was about to escape when John witnessed what was happening. So he goes speeding over to jump out to help Floyd, a doctor. Floyd mistook him as a good Samaritan when he came running out there thinking he'd come out there to help, pulled his knife and was about to cut Ramsey. And Ramsey said, whoa, don't cut me. I'm here to help you. She's about to get away. And he helps him snatch her. That was Carmen Colon. That was the first victim of the Alphabet murders. And they never planned those girls' murders out. They were just... conveniently found, they'd seen them, and they would just go and abduct the girl, take her out and murder her. It never occurred to them until the news put it out that their first and last initials of their names were the same, and they were being called the out murderer. Because it was just by chance that their victims' names were that. They were not targeted. They were not pre-planned. They were found and randomly picked up and taken out and murdered.
Wow. And for somebody like Ramsey to still have been, that's still out there and saying, well, I'm innocent. I can't be found with doing anything, because people keep protecting him, like McLaughlin and so on, you know, and then they keep covering up the threats. The people holler up.
Well, they know how he likes to run his mouth, the way he likes to boast and brag about the children he's murdered. They have to keep him out of jail, because the moment he gets locked up, he's probably going to start running his mouth. If he don't tell the police and they put him back in a cell with somebody, he's not going to be able to help himself, and he's going to sit there and he's going to brag, boast, and laugh about all these children he's murdered and probably who helped him do it. And that's end of the story for all of them. End of the road for all of them.
It's a shame that when they did interviews with him, that he actually was lying about all that kind of stuff, you know, about the JonBenet Ramsey case. He didn't boast about that, but when he came, he thought that you were about to be killed. He spilled the beans, thinking you're going to take the secrets with you. He didn't expect you to survive.
No, no, they believed they were going to, they were going to have me killed within 2 years after having Beth and Matt murdered. And they tried. And that's what really threw a lot of people off. And Murphy is the one I wound up there. And, of course, they were being told I was a federal agent or mole or working as an informant with the FBI. You know, like I said, these people can't tell the truth if their lives depended on it.
Right.
I mean, they just lie about any and everything because they're able to get away with it. Because I really believe a lot of them believe their own lies. I really saw my brother Fred believe a lot of his own lies. And
did Fred ever have kids himself?
Yes, he has. He actually has four of his own. And
do you know whether or not he has done anything violent to them?
Well, I think they're in between a rock and a hard place because they were going to sacrifice their youngest child, which was his son.
Uh-huh.
And I put a stop to that. Don't think his son knows this. I'm about confident that most of his children don't know. I'm kind of wondering if at least one of them has to know that he was planning, you know, to get rid of his son. Because his son was born with one hand. And he didn't think he was going to be able to function a normal life and have a happy production life. So he was going to give him up. That discussion came up over at the hospital one evening. He made the mistake of showing up while I was still there to where I could have my little conversation with him in that hospital. And he admitted that they was going to get rid of his son.
How was he at this time?
Josh could have been no more than when they were talking about going to get rid of him, he would have been around 7 or 8. But at this time, he was like around 12 or something like that. When we had the conversation, my dad was in the hospital in the ICU.
That's pathetic.
This was after they almost got killed over there on Far Road. I went up there and I had my little conversation with him. I put him on the spot. They had called security in there to watch us while we talked, and they had me to leave for a while because the conversation got that tense.
It kind of reminds me of a friend of mine from high school. He had just a little nub for a little thumb, and she didn't have the rest of her hand, you know, just a little bitty spot right there. But she can bend down that little nub over a baseball bat. And we played softball. You would not think that girl would have the strength, but she knocked the ball further than anyone could on, you know, PE or whatever. And she knocked it over. It's a long way, way past the ball field and over a school bus and way over there. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people, you know, That's what people need to realize. Individuality, again, each of us are unique in our own individual manner. Some of us might be gifted in different areas than others are gifted, but we're all unique. We were created to be unique in ourselves. There's nobody else that is exactly like us. And
the government
wants us to believe that we're all the same. Well, no, we're not. We're all, distinctly different. We are not all the same. I mean, I hate to bust Uncle Sam's bubble, but that's what makes every one of us unique. It's the discussion came up over there in the Traveler Spreads Truth, their own Instagram the other night about mankind and humankind, because, to me, I tell people, they'll say, well, he ain't got a soul. Well, he's got a soul, all right. It's just a doggone demon.
But can you imagine, though, everybody shot when we got closer to her, thinking like, oh, she just got a nub of a hand. She can't hit very far, right? So all of us was getting really close to her, thinking that it'd be a small little grounder or whatever. Imagine our astonishment when it's like she hit that ball and it was like, whoa. That taught us a lesson right there, that she was very powerful with that hand, and she was, that showed how much strength and fortitude that girl had. She didn't look at it as being any kind of debilitating problem. I mean, she was a positive role model in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
She taught a lot of us a valuable lesson that day about handicaps,
Yeah, that's like that guy that I watched this UFC fight one time. I had to watch it a few times because I was amazed. He had this guy around, he had to be around 5'10", 5'11". Big old black guy, about 6'3", 6'4", big old muscled up rascal. And you're looking at this, white guy sitting there against this big old huge black guy. And you're like, this white guy's about to get doggone creamed. No. First of the fight, the white guy throws a right jab so hard, the black guy drops on his knees. He jumps up, puts his foot up on his knee, jumps up on his back, and puts him in the chokehold and chokes him out, and the fight's over just like that. I mean, just within seconds, the fight was over.
Yeah.
And that lets you know size does not mean anything.
Exactly.
You're going to have a guy, he's 6'4", big old arms, big old muscles. But I put some of those guys down in arm wrestling. I put quite a few of them down in fights, but it's strength. Just because a guy's 6'3", 6'4", and he's big, strong, and all that doesn't mean he's got more strength than the smaller guy. He's just bigger, and his muscles, of course, are bigger. But doesn't mean he has more strength than, a guy a lot smaller who's done a whole lot harder type of labor or intense training, exercises, or whatever. Doesn't make them any stronger. It just makes them bigger. So that's why I've always had the philosophy is the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Yeah, look at David and Glass.
Yes, I mean, perfect example. I mean, do not judge a book by its cover. Do not judge you know, someone just because you think they're ugly. They look ugly. Because some of those people, you sit down and you talk with them, and they're genius level people and fully level headed. And just because they may look ugly on the outside, are some of the most beautiful people you'll ever meet in your life when you sit down and talk with them.
And then there's some of the most handsomest, prettiest people around, and you start talking to them and you see how ugly they truly are.
That's correct. And you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, I've seen some of the most attractive looking women in my life. And the moment that mouth opened up and those drunk words started slurring out and every book, you know, vulgar book name being used in the book, you're just like, my gosh, okay, I've seen enough of this and I'm out of here. But
may I ask you what your next step's going to be? So you're still investigating the Route 29 stalkers at the moment, or?
Well, it took me a 3-day vacation here a few weeks ago down to Cancun for a wedding, which, of course, the couple were from Peru. And I wound up meeting a gentleman down there whose dad was a clothing manufacturer in the 1980s, or up until the 1980s, until his clothing factories kept getting hit with bombs, and he kept losing employees getting killed from these bomb attacks by Sendero Luminoso. Well, come to find out, his dad had crossed paths with Ray Duncan.
Wow.
So I've been working a little on the side, getting into the, which I already knew there was a connection. I was never able to sit down and meet someone. I knew there was a connection between Sendero Luminoso, Tupac Amaru, and the terrorist attacks of the 80s and 90s, and this group, because they were backed by the same oil companies.
And I think it's kind of funny. It was a vacation, and you end up running into somebody.
It is. And so now I have my proof that Duncan Oil, and of course, I played a little role down there in that getting Operation Predator brokered to the Toledo administration in 2005 as a U.S. envoy for the Bush administration, found that natural gas that they have been trying to get the access to. And it's just all transformed that country and its economy after I brokered that deal, called Saudi Arabia, China, and the United States went in there, and they just dumped all this money into the Peru's economy. And they kicked all the American workers in the mining out, and now Peruvians do their own mining of their gold.
Wow.
So they did get their natural gas that they were willing to go down there and overthrow the Peruvian government to get to, when they sank the United States government. They, you know, this was going to be the end of the Canadian government, United States government, Mexican government. They were going to merge us into one government. They already had their money, the Dinero. They had already planned to start printing once they pulled them all in together and moved the nation's capital to Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow.
And so when the stuff my colleagues, I and our Heavenly Father, interfered with in the 1990s, they didn't get their new world order. They're still trying to get their new world order. But nobody wants to be governed by a bunch of doggone pedophiles.
Amen.
So that's where we're at.
Basically, by Satanists, really by Satanists, you know?
Well, it is, but it's kind of like the vision that George Washington had. And he was called the Son of the Republic. And in that vision, how we would come under the European influence, well, that's the Church of Rome. If we pick up our Bibles, we kneel down in prayer, and we ask our Father to lead us to the truth, he's going to show us the truth. That's the whole purpose of going to him in prayer, is having him to reveal to us. We don't. That's why we don't need a preacher. That's why we really don't need a rabbi. We can go to our Heavenly Father in prayer, and he's going to reveal to us, answer the questions that we may have. As long as we have confidence and faith in our prayers that he will answer, he will answer. And we are very much a Catholic nation because of our traditions. American traditions have been derived from the Catholic culture. We are no longer, nor have we been, a nation based upon the principles of Judeo-Christianity since the last part of the 19th century, because we went ahead in 1870 and got declared as a corporation. And
what
so,
really messed us up?
It is, and they went in and they adopted all these Catholic traditions as our national holidays. And as a nation, we're being cursed on the account of it, because that was the whole purpose of a new nation, which, of course, you know, God has his plan. I'm not trying to say he don't. But this was meant to happen to wake the world up. It has been prophesied there through Isaiah. It's been prophesied there in the Gospels. They're what we call New Testament, and I don't think there's New Testament. It's all the same testimony. But, you know, Christ teaches it. Okay. So we're in this era of time to where we as Americans, we have the knowledge now. We have the internet, social media, where we can find these truths and find that we can build our relationship with our Heavenly Father by overcoming these traditions that has been really indoctrinated into us in the 20th century, and help him guide us out of that and help us start working our way back into being what we're supposed to be as a nation.
We don't need to listen to people saying that God don't work miracles anymore, that God don't reside in our hearts to guide us in the ways. If they're telling falsehood like that, you know, they're not true Christians. They're not going by what the Bible says.
And some of them want proof, and once they get the proof, it's still not enough for them. Others who get the proof, they're going to rejoice, and that they're going to go in prayer. And when the reality comes to them, they're going to be outraged, upset, ready to kill the world. Then suddenly, they're going to overcome that, and they're going to feel at peace. Because then they have overcome the deception that has been indoctrinated into us through these 501c nonprofit organizations they call churches.
Yes. You got another caller in. Do you want to see if they...
Sure.
Caller 914. Hello? And there was a lot of background noise. I'm not sure what that noise was. Let me try it again, okay? I might want to get at another area. Hello there. Hello, caller 9114. Hello, how are you doing? Do you have a question for Blackstone Lawyer? Or comment? I guess not. You go ahead.
Okay. But that's where we're at as a nation right now. People are starting to figure out these big, filthy rich televangelists are nothing out there but just to get rich. And I really believe a lot of them are actually atheists and don't even believe in Jesus, much less our Heavenly Father. It's just in it for the money. Yeah. And they're the ones that we get to watch whenever we turn on television and want to watch. Those are the ones who are put there to indoctrinate us. Yeah. Now it's all coming out on them, and we're entering a new era to where people are going to realize there is a God. And there is a one we know is Jesus Christ. That just isn't his name. And yes, he did this, and yes, he did that. And they're going to realize that very much the people who came to this continent to escape religious persecution were very well in tune in their relationship with our Heavenly Father when they came here to escape that mess out there from the Church of England and Church of Rome.
Hey, if you want to speak, you give him a couple words of encouragement or any questions you'd like to say to Blackstone Lawyer?
About your brother, did he serve time because of this or anything? Or
no, sir. He's always had protection out of people like Judge McLaughlin there in Cobb County. He was always able to work his way out of ever being charged for anything. There was one girl, I didn't even find this out until just a few years back, that he and Nance had went over and tried to sneak her out of her parents' home one night. And she was underage and they were of age. And and my dad got a call and had to go in, and they wound up not being charged. So I don't know what happened there, how it happened, who or what. I'm assuming with McLaughlin being the magistrate, assistant magistrate, being as close tied as he was to Bill Hudson, sheriff of Cobb County, that it was all hushed, and either the victim and her family threatened or intimidated or coerced not to, press charges, like I've seen in so many cases, because we're dealing with people, they have no regard for the lives of their own children, so why would they have the regard for the lives of your and my children? They don't. And they can call it a democracy all they want to call it, but it's nothing but a hypocrisy. It's don't do as we do, just do as we say. Now, they'll go out here and rape a child without inviting one of us along because we hate competition. you do it without one of us, well, we're going to stick to you. We want to make an example out of you, you know. Don't go out here and murder people like we do. We can go out here and murder all we want to, but you don't go out here and get caught drinking and driving because you're going to make an example out of you. That is what we are dealing with when they want to call it a democracy. We got this small group, pedophiles. They're in Central Bank and the Federal Reserve Bank. Definitely running Home Depot over there is one of the largest child trafficking covers in the United States is the Home Depot Corporation. They try to have their own corporate headquarters. Attacked with a truck bomb on June 13th, 1997. And I know every executive, CEO Arthur Blank included, were not only involved in that, but they were also involved in the Atlanta child murders.
Mm.
So if you ever heard the song The Lunatic Fringe by Red Ryder, who
yes,
were they singing about?
I'm not familiar with that, but I have heard the song.
Yeah, you have to listen to the lyrics. It's in the music. We can listen to a lot of the music, and the music, if we listen to some of these artists and their songs and stuff, we're able to pick it out that they're singing about it in their music. You know, it's like Meatloaf in his song, Lice and Lemon and I Want My Money Back. The way he lays it out, the way they, you know, the way the deep state does things, that's pretty much what the song is all about. You know, all their lies and all the issues that they put out, you know, Lice and Lemon and I Want My Money Back. You know, that's pretty much what the song is about. And so it is in, the music culture, the songs they have put out. It's like, you know, what was that song Bob Dylan came out with in the 1960s? I don't need a weatherman to, you know, give me a, you know, forecast, you know, I forgot the song, never heard the song, but that's what started the Weathermen movement. And then, of course, we saw what that turned into, Weather Underground, after they went and set out explosives on the nation's capital. I think it was 69 they did that. And they put explosives in a restaurant that killed a bunch of people they didn't mean to kill. And according to Doug McRae, he went up there and told them how to wire that explosive so it would blow up on them in that condominium up there in Manhattan when that baker's daughter got killed.
And remember how the ball fields in different areas and different states are also wired?
Yeah, but this stuff is they started trying to bring this country to its knees in the late 1960s over the Vietnam War, and we can now go and really look in and start putting the pieces of the puzzle together to find just how they used mind control and programming to program the American population into thinking the way they wanted them to think, or at least enough of us thinking the way they wanted us to think, when they started the sexual revolution, which was really started by Alfred Kinsey. Kinsey Institute lost its funding almost 2 years ago because it was all fake science. there was no bit of truth in anything that came out of the Kinsey Institute other than were experiments sexually on children. That we can establish.
Can you hold for a second? I want to make sure that people can call in to 563-999-3517 if there are any calls or comments. Thank you.
But a lot of these people that are involved in this death cult and in this corruption, their beliefs are based on the science of the Kinsey Institute. They honestly believe that some children find pleasure in being sexually abused.
Sick.
I've actually ran into a couple of people that had been essayed to men from a dating site, and they told me that they enjoyed being abused and everything. Let's get together and continue selling our bodies and everything. And I said, excuse me, if you're a true victim, why would you want to continue doing that? He said, because I enjoy it. I'm like, don't not ever contact me ever again. Because the real survivors were that's dealt with that do not enjoy it. It bothers them. It weighs on their conscience. I said, I really think you're just a pedophile. Looking for women
well,
who have been abused in that way to try to get them to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think Ed
looking
Bentley
for fellow
Jr.
victims. Huh?
Yeah. I think Ed Bentley Jr. was sexually abused by his own daddy, and he enjoyed it. And, I mean, I hate to say this, but I really believe that's where he earned his nickname Fast Eddie from. Was the amount of judges and police officers or anyone he could take care of there in Marietta in the day's time is why he earned the nickname Fast Eddie. Now, I might be wrong. I'm not going to swear up and down to it, but I know for over 60 years over there on that farm, they've been engaging in child sex trafficking and production of child pornography. And there's a significant amount of law enforcement that is involved.
And I can't pinpoint the exact locations in the Georgia area where I told you that I had myself been in a couple of the barns where they did that and seen kids tied up. I can't remember the exact locations, you know?
Yeah, I think they tore that one barn down in the 80s when they had to tear down, no, late 70s. When they had to tear down the concrete stables there on the side of 120 Loop there in Marietta, used to be able to see from the road because that was part of the settlement agreement between old man Bentley and my dad in that 1978 court settlement. But they had to destroy both of those buildings, and if I'm not mistaken, that other barn where they have been sexually abusing and holding people in. So the barn that they was using was right there as the on-ramp off of Roswell Road onto the 120 loop we call North Marietta Parkway. And every Marietta resident has ever driven through there can tell you there's no telling how many times the loft in that barn is caught on fire, but yet the barn never burned down. Well, according to the Bentleys, well, it was because of vandals. Well, I'll tell you what, that's a pretty good eye, an eye on your barn, so when you know when it does catch on fire, you can get the fire department out there in enough time to put it out before it burns down, not just once. Not just twice, not just three times, but dozens of times.
That's a good way to destroy evidence.
Yeah, well, it needs to go in the Guinness Book of World Records as the burningest barn in the world, because the son of a gun, when it does burn down, it gets built back up and continues getting burned. I mean, nobody really knew what was going on until I said something. Now everybody in
the barn
is talking about it now.
See, the barn I remember being in the Marietta area, you know, was a block barn type of thing, you know. And then I remember, you know, I told you about the fence post that was going around and how they chased the kid and, you know, that kid's body lying over and being bloodied and everything. And then they had to tear the fencing down to destroy it because it left some blood remnants of whoever this child was.
Well, I might be wrong,
that.
That may have been a concrete barn. That may have been a wooden barn that was tore down. But if I remember correctly, most of it had been built out of concrete. I might be wrong. Not going to swear up to it, but people that's from this area, I'll find out either way sooner or later if it was concrete. But I'm thinking it was. But then you're talking, you know, over 50 years ago.
Right. And from to actually
and I never was in it. I was in the living quarters in the stables, you know, where the Stubbs family lived, in the living quarters. But I wasn't held in any barn or anything like that, like other children had been held.
You see, the bad thing is, what I remember in Marietta, you know, when they had these wood things, relics type of thing, where they could hang things up on a hanger. So they used that wood to hang, and there was kids that got it wrapped up in plastic to hang on it there. I wish I could get those pictures out of my mind, man.
I bet you do. I would wish I could try to get pictures like that out of my mind.
But it's in Marietta. I know it was. I can validate on that in my mind. You know what I'm saying?
Well, if it's Marietta, it was Bentley Farm.
I was there. And I can remember the part of the guy's look. You know, I told you he was had wavy hair. And I cannot say much more about him. And it was dark hair. But I cannot describe too much more other than that about him.
Well, maybe when you view some of the pictures that's being released to the people that I'm releasing, maybe you'll be able to find him and identify him.
Well, you know, remember some of the pictures you were showing me? I told you I felt like vomiting and puking everywhere.
Ma'am?
You remember that?
Which one?
Some of the pictures that you shown at Facebook. I responded and said, with this picture right here, I want to vomit. Send this picture. I don't know why, but I just want to, I really feel queasy. It's like two or three of the guys made me really sick. But a lot of the other ones like had like seven or eight different pictures, and then like two or three of the guys are like, I really feel sick looking at this guy. I really feel sick.
I've never met Robert Cook, nor ever met John Cook. Well, I think I can't say John. I don't think I've ever met Robert Cook. Now, I know that Bobby has real wavy hair because they got that composite sketch out there in the Delphi Murders that matches up to him and his cousin Mike Cook. The Delphi murders are connected to this as well. It's because
remember
of
also, I asked you about a vehicle not too long ago. I said because back in the 70s, there was a car that would keep coming up part of the driveway, then back out, and I described it. You said that sounds like such and such's car. Remember
the blue and white gremlin?
Yes.
Yeah.
It kept coming up the driveway part of the way. Every time when I was home alone, I was so petrified. But he just backed out, whoever
Doug
it was,
McRae,
in a gribbon.
Doug McRae had, I think it was a 75 Gremlin with a V8. He also had a Dodge Duster, I think, if I remember correctly, the two vehicles that they were calling suspicious over there in Oakland County, Michigan.
Right.
I think I showed you what I call the Age of Progression composite sketches of Doug McRae, because you find one in the Timothy King case, and then you find the other in the Levi Frady case. You know, of course, the guy is like 40 years older, so you could tell looking in the first composite sketch in the Timothy King case, and you look at the eyes, and you look at the eyes in the composite sketch in the Levi Frady murder case, you can tell the same guy. And that is Doug McRae of the Radio Shack in Murphy, North Carolina, which, of course, Radio Shack, I think there's only one location left here in the United States, and it's open there in Commerce, Georgia. That is
right.
The only one I'm aware of. And, of course, he knows the McRae's, because you had Merle and Doug brothers. And, of course, Merle was a musician. But Doug gave him the Radio Shack when he got out of the Army, tired out of the Army. Doug gave him the Radio Shack. They opened up another in Andrews. And that way Doug could free up his time and travel the country and, you know, stop, monitor, you know, children and all that for their sex trafficking operations.
Right.
That's the reason why he gave his brother the Radio Shack.
It's kind of scary, you know. I didn't pinpoint some of this stuff before, but I knew I had relatives in Georgia, but I don't think my relatives were done this except for my father and my stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were the two in general that were doing this and taking me to there. My daddy himself was the one that was delivering me to these monsters.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and did you kind of think, because after my dad died, that my stepmom moved to this location and she was having devil worshiping out in the yard? So then all of a sudden this blue and white, you know, that gremlin would come up part of the way whenever she was gone to go eat on a Sunday. But I was staring out of a bedroom window at a different angle, and that person might have thought, well, I got a surprise, or, you know, the surprise attack type of thing, and, you know, but no, I was busy looking out that window watching, you know.
Well, that's like Rhonda Geneva Walker. She was one of the child trafficking victims of John Carr and Monty and John Ramsey back in the 90s there before and after the homicide of JonBenet. You can Google search her obituary. She died a few years back at 32 years of age, which, of course, had to be methamphetamine related, because the girl became a junkie at 14 years of age. But you know, she's dead now. But that was Andalusia, Alabama, where that was taking place at. If viewers are wondering what it is that John Ramsey said to me, if they've not heard in the past interviews, I'm going to repeat it now. But it was after they murdered those two teenagers I'd rescued from over there at that barn. And it was I felt like it was a suicide mission. And it just about became one. And by the way they wanted it done, they wanted me to bring the two boys up behind the nursery there, Pike Nursery, and it was a BP gas station back then, of course, Waffle House Unit 479 sits on the other corner of Greenbrier Parkway, and that's where Matt Darrington and Beth Ramsey was going to take one of the teenagers and take off while I ran with the other one up there behind the car lot and other business into the East Lake Shopping Center, where Paula was going to pick me and the other teenager up, and that way both teenagers wouldn't be in one vehicle. Well, my cousin Robert Veach and Ed Bentley Jr., there with my Judge McLaughlin, who killed both of those two teenagers since we ran across Greenbrier Parkway.
Yeah, because y'all had asked her not to tell somebody, but she did end up telling, trusting her brother.
Yeah, we told, Matt and I told her not to say a word to John Andrew. We didn't trust John Andrew. She thought she could because he was her younger brother, and him and her had a bonded brother and sister that she thought she had enough confidence in John Andrew that she could tell him, and he wouldn't tell their dad, and he did. He snitched us right out, and they were prepared and waiting on me to go over there and take those two, free those two black teenagers. And that is why Beth is dead, and JonBenet murdered to get her back for trying to get them busted. That was John's exact words, because he arrived around 10 minutes after they killed those two teenagers, and he came over, and they had Paula with him and John Andrew. And, well, no, John Andrew was still parked at the shopping center, but John came over there with Paula and somebody else. And that's when he broke down and had his conversation with the four of us. And he looked
at now, that broke the bond between sister and brother completely.
Well, yeah, because Beth and Matt, they wanted to get married. They knew the moment that they got married, they were going to be pressured by the family to have children. They was going to be pressured by his family, and they was going to get some pressure out of her family, Lucy and Patsy, and, you know, they have children. Well, Beth did not want to have children as long as her dad was not in prison, because she was afraid that he would wind up sexually abusing her children, maybe get rid of her to where he could wind up with the children and wind up sexually abusing them. That was Beth's fear.
Right, because look at them. If they would have had kids and they died like they did, they would have got their kids.
Yeah. Yeah, she did not trust her daddy whatsoever. And she had good reason. He had sexually abused her when she was 7 years of age. And he had actually raped her. And
she didn't tell you herself. She's such a lady that she got Matt to tell you for her, right?
Yeah, Matt, she tried. She didn't like talking about it. But by golly, Matt put it out there just the way it was. She was comfortable with her grandfather, Jay, okay, but too comfortable. But Matt laid it out to me plain and simple about Jay and John Ramsey. And he sat there and said that she didn't like to talk about what happened to her, but John had raped her when she was 7 years old. I mean, totally raped his own daughter. And Melanie, her younger sister, the moment that he had put his hand up her dress, similar to what he had done initially with Beth, was when Beth went and told her mother about what happened. And that's what really wound up in the divorce of Lucy and John Ramsey. Now, they said he was cheating on her. Well, yeah, and, you know, him and Nancy Grace and Lynn Wood, you know, to my understanding, had their little love triangle going on for a while. And I don't think she was the only prosecutor over at the Fulton County DA's office they were having their fun with, or I think there were some of them women over there at the Cobb DA's office these guys were out there doing their little thing with as well, who were totally keen on what they were doing to children. And
yeah. You have to be careful who you trust, because there's some people that I thought, you know, some of the names have been here, I thought they could be trusted, and then I'm here, their names just like, whoa. So you got to be careful who you actually do.
Mm-hmm. Well, she got smart. She said once she got to hold JonBenet for the first time, it just melted her heart. She just she just fell in love with her little half-sister. So since she worked for Delta Airlines, she could fly into the Atlanta airport and sometimes take a cab or have a friend Paula come pick her up or someone come pick her up at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And she could go to her daddy's house in Marietta.
We got 90 seconds. Hey, can you hear me? We got 90 seconds left. So remember when we left off here.
Yeah. But anyway, John told Beth after he had us killed that he was going to dye JonBenet's hair blonde, dress her up like a beauty queen.
Blackstone, we're about to go off the air. It's about time's running out.
Okay. But that's why JonBenet and Beth Ramsey were murdered.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing all this with us, and we'll continue the next time where we left off. I want to thank you so much for coming, and thank you so much for our listeners.
Well, thank you for having me on your program, and I hope everybody have a wonderful day, and let's say a prayer for our nation and the children hereof, because we've got a lot of work we got to do to keep our children protected.
Yes, and JonBenet and Beth are not with Satan. I believe they're with God. I really do believe that.
They are. I really believe that Beth is been one of my guardian angels,
okay.
Matt
there,
as well. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a blessed day.
God bless. You too. Bye-bye.